Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
It's dull and old fashioned. And what the hell was with that music?
Forget oil and gas. We should be investing in time travel.
The whole group felt this was the way to go.
Ms. Flores, you were a voice of dissent, not a fan of the 80s?
No, I love the 80s.
Dun, dun, da, da, da. Dun, dun, da, da, da.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 173 for the week of October 9th, 2017. I'm Snackable Cake Topper Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm here with Scruffy Grifter, Tar Ariano, special guest star Heather Coxlier, and Poison Paint aficionado Jessica Morgan. Heroic theme song work, Tara Ariano. Welcome back to another episode of Extra Hot Great. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I am joined by the Fug Girls, Heather and Jessica. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello, ladies.
We have a little site business. As you may have guessed from our intro, Tara, would you like to explain?
Dave is back in Niagara dealing with a family emergency. So we are doing this in a semi-analog fashion. We do not have his soundboard with all of our usual sound cues. So where possible, I will be reproducing them with my voice. I am the Bobby McFerrin of Extra Hot Great for this week. So please bear with us while we do this extremely shambolic lo-fi version of the podcast and try not to shame Dave from a distance.
It's like we're cosplaying our own podcast. It's kind of amazing. We do not
have... Anyway, welcome, Heather and Jessica. So good to have you back for a discussion of the reboot of Dynasty. We're recording this the night before it premieres. By the time you hear this, it will still be a few hours out from starting. And I wanted to hear from you because I am not a Dynasty expert. I'm sure I watched it on and off when it was actually on because I am very old, but I haven't revisited it as an adult. So I know that there are names that are the same as in the original iteration, but let's start with Heather. Tell us what has changed from the original to this reboot.
Well, you know, a fair amount. I think Crystal is the same. I think she was Blake's, secretary in the original one. And now she's got like she's fully actualized as a working human, mm-hmm. With a business mind. They have made a lot of characters mixed race, it's a mixed race cast, which the original Dynasty was not particularly. But one thing I feel like if you watch this and you didn't watch the original Dynasty, you might have the feeling of God, who are all these? Like, why do they just keep adding people? And it felt a lot like they were making pains to add characters that had the same names and roles as the original one, even if it felt like too crowded for a pilot, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly we had Jeff Colby coming in, and then we had the Matthew Blaisdell and Claudia Blaisdell thing. Plus, we were setting up Fallon, and we were setting up Steven, and Sammy Jo is there already. And it was just a lot. I felt like ticking off boxes in like a way that they seem to think was really clever and cutesy, but in a way that I think made it feel a little bit rote.
Jessica, what did you think of the adaptations for this reboot?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, I liked some of them. Like, I like the idea that Sammy Jo is a dude in this one. Obviously, in the original, Sammy Jo is Heather Locklear. but I kind of agree with Heather that I feel like, as I was watching it, I was kind of thinking, like, is the audience for this really going to get all these jokes? Like, I got them because I watched all of Dynasty, but I'm also 42 years old, so I kind of don't know how well I think this stuff is going to translate. And sort of, I agree with Heather that I don't know if they had to jam it all in into the pilot. I will say that
especially like Sammy Jo wasn't in the pilot.
Yeah.
Of the original one, I mean.
Also, I mean, what people don't really necessarily know is that the first season of Dallas was kind of, Dynasty was kind of boring, actually, as I thought was this pilot, frankly. You know, like Alexis doesn't even show up till the final episode of the first season, if I recall correctly. So it's a show that is not afraid to like unveil things in a pokey manner. And I know that TV is kind of different now than it was back in the day, but I think that it felt a little jam-packed to me.
One thing they did was that they leaned straight into Steven being gay, which in the original series, I think there were hints of it. But he also, you know, he slept with Sammy Joe, and he and the Claudia Blaisdell character they get married, I think, but they also have like a love affair, and there's some question, and they don't really kind of go full into his sexuality until much later. So it will be interesting to see if they keep his like bisexual flow or if they just like go straight at, you know, he's the gay character. Like they jumped right into that.
I can't remember how Dynasty conversant you are, Sarah. What did you think?
I am not Dynasty conversant. I had to look up, I looked up a few things to see what was different, and I still wasn't getting a sense of which changes had been made and at what, you know, how much they were bending like the timeline based on the original. I did get the feeling that a lot of these like name checks were straight out of the original pitch that got the show sold. Mm-hmm. But I was basically fine with it. Like, everybody's really pretty. My favorite part was when I was like, I forget what scene it even was, but I was like, this is really reminding me of Revenge with the outfits and how much I love them.
Oh,
and
yeah,
how over the top this is. And then Nick Wexler appears on screen, and I was like, yeah. Oh yeah, that yes. guy. So I miss Revenge. Like, it got real bad, but I miss it. And I thought this, you know, this will be perfectly acceptable, like campy outfit and decor porn. And, you know, I yes. like Fallon, and like, I would watch it again, but I'm probably not going to make a point to watch it again because I feel like it's not necessary to my life. It's not like filling a need for me. Are you guys going to keep going with it?
I might. I always
the
like
long
as a
silence
habit.
Speaks volumes.
I know. I mean, I have a hard time. Like, I like watching, like trying out a new show with about three episodes, because I feel like the pilot is sort of a tough beast, because that's trying to accomplish something different totally. Than a regular series episode would. It's basically like it's a sales pitch to the network and kind of to audiences. And then I think a lot of shows fall into the trap of the second episode rehashing a lot of the pilot because they forget that the audience just saw it and that they're actually like, what that is like a warm up for the writer's room. And then the third episode and the fourth kind of is where you start to see like, okay, this is where they think maybe they're starting to go with it. So I like to give things some space. And honestly, I had a similar reaction to Sarah, which was I have a hole in my schedule right now for some campy, bitchy drama. So I am more than happy to like, it's the kind of show that I will not watch with undivided attention, but I will put it on like the next day on my DVR while I'm working.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I did wonder how much the decision was made to make this a reboot that rejiggered a bunch of characters versus a sequel based on the lessons learned from TNT's Dallas. Did anyone else watch that but me?
Oh, no, we did.
I watched that.
We both watched it. I kind of liked Dallas.
Okay, so do you think this is potentially more successful than that in terms of like just remaking the characters versus trying to pick them up like however many years later?
I personally kind of liked the Dallas reboot for a couple reasons. First of all, it had Larry Hagman, who is amazing. And I kind of thought it was better acted. It was sort of trashier in a way than this was. It's so hard to judge a show on just a pilot. Pilots are always hard. Like, you're setting stuff up. They're always exposition-y. I thought the pilot was a little flat, and it felt a little inexpensive to me in a way I found surprising. As I recall, the Dallas reboot sort of like they knew what show they were. And I sort of thought that this was going to know what show it was better than I feel like it managed to get across. I don't know. I sort of thought it was going to be, I mean, obviously it was trashy. A guy got his face blown up, but I kind of wanted it to be trashier.
Do you think it's hard to make business interesting?
Yes.
And the original dynasty in Dallas managed to do that partly through like the force of personality and then the force of camp. Those two things kind of came together in a way that I think is going to be hard to recapture with this group of people. Because, you know, Grant's show is Melrose Place, and that's great. But, you know, I thought Crystal was kind of, you know, she was okay. None of the other actors really grabbed me other than I thought that the girl, is it Elizabeth Gillies who plays Fallon? Mm-hmm. She has a very, like, this is what Lindsay Lohan could have turned out to be quality to me. Like, I watch her and I felt Lindsay Lohan and Mean Girls a little bit. I don't know, just about her, everything about her felt like Lindsay Lohan would be watching that with massive jealous regrets. And that worked for her. I thought that character worked. But you know, when Dallas had a lot, like keeping with the same characters felt familiar and it kind of let them go back to the well in a way that I think Dynasty might need to. Like people these days don't really, like, I don't know that anybody cares that much about Dynasty without any of the original people from Dynasty.
Yeah, the problem with that is twofold. One, all of the original Dynasty people are 5,000 years old, and except for Heather Locklear, they look it.
Yeah, Joan Collins doesn't.
And Joan Collins.
And Joan Collins, of course.
Yeah. I believe she's eternal.
Speaking of which, when I was taking notes, I kept calling Crystal Alexis in my notes, even though they never called her that once, like, because she just seemed like she had more of an Alexis energy than the Crystal that I remembered. Anyone else?
Yeah, Crystal was a bit of a doormat in the original one.
I mean, the other problem is with having old cast members come back is, like, obviously Steven could come back. He still looks great.
Yeah.
But he's the same age as Grant Show.
Yeah. Right.
So there you go.
Yeah. They'd have to have done like a continuation, like you said. And I don't know. It's interesting. It also feels like they're trying really hard to be like, it's business. It's like a modern sensibility. Like, and I like that everybody's a career person and everyone has ambitions, but that does kind of make the plot really heavily on business shenanigans in a way that I don't know that the CW has ever been very successful with.
Well, that's my other thing. Like, the business intrigue storylines are always what sinks these campy shows for me. Like, no one cares. Anytime the OC got into anyone's business, like, as soon as Alan Dale showed up here, in fact, I mean, I was like, thank God he's just a butler, because I don't need to see the patron saint of boring business intrigue stories in yet another show. But, like, on Lost, on the OC, but, like, this at the same time, like, I appreciated the nods that they were trying to make to, you know, have to bring this story about an energy company into the 21st century by, like, having this whole green initiative story going on as well as all of the oil and other pollutants and stuff. And the idea of having Blake and Steven have this huge falling out about, like, their principles, like, that's interesting to me, but I'm a pinko. Like, I don't know if a 22-year-old CW viewer who normally, like, just watches Legends of Tomorrow and Jane the Virgin, like, I agree. I don't know if they care about all this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they were obviously borrowing heavily from, you know, protests and stuff that have happened in real life. I did sort of think it was interesting when they had, I think it was Fallon, make an offhand reference to, and I quote, the president dad voted for.
Yep.
Like, they had no problem. Didn't they show the Trumps in the cold open, but then they didn't say his name?
No, like, but they were, like, but as an example of another dynasty of, like, a family business that's being passed down.
Yes. I felt like that whole opener was like, are we unclear on the concept of what a dynasty is? Because let me walk you through this. Like, a network note. Like, I don't think the average CW viewer has heard this word.
Oh, God.
We need more Kardashians in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also to explain what oil is, which is what I felt like was happening at the beginning there. Heard also. Of
it. Well, I wonder if the show might not have been better suited to, because it just seems like it's going to be chewing up plot at a rate that is much more, you know, commensurate with its status as a 2017 show. Back in the day, even nighttime soaps, you could be a little more stately because there just wasn't that much on to choose from. So you looked at the outfits and you were content. But maybe this would have been better on a streaming service that would also let them, like, swear and show some D. Is that just me?
No, I think you're right. I feel like it might not be very binge-worthy. I mean, it might be more binge-worthy rather than, like, a wait-and-see every week kind of show. Like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Like, they need better cliffhangers if they're going to do that. So yeah, I feel like the benefit of being able to watch a bunch of them in a row would have been nice for this.
But I also think they're probably taking their, in terms of being like a network with a lot of cliffhangers that moves at a very fast pace, that they have Scandal as an example and with Scandal ending this season, they may see this as an opportunity to get into that sort of the bonkers TV on network space as well. They also acquired all of the archives of the original Dynasty, and you can watch those on the CW app. So maybe their hope is like,
oh, really?
We can watch, you know, that the millennials will catch up on those and then also be interested in the new one. I, for the reasons that Sarah says, I'm curious to know how much today's kids are interested in a show that old, because they really, like, primetime soaps really did move slow. It's true.
Especially that first season, which is pretty deadly. It gets much better once Claudia Blaisdell accidentally burns down La Mirage with her candles of hate, which is a plot twist I really hope that they pick up for this one. But...
Well, and I was joking to Heather this morning that, you know, the scene here where Matthew gets his face, gets blown up at the fracking fields. In the original Dynasty, they recast Steven and he gets blown up on an oil rig. And obviously they take his bandages off and he's a new person. And I was like, I would love it if they had just, and obviously they're not going to do this because this actor is like a real person. if they had just blown up a dude and then recast him for the second episode as like a joke.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have been amazing.
They just recast him in just every episode. I think I would get behind
that. Oh my God,
that would
be great. I would definitely be on board for that.
I also spent the whole episode being like, how do I know this sad faced man? And then I remembered it was Revenge, which is basically the exact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like a professional sad faced everyman.
The noble, but poor, sad faced lover
yes,
of a
and
rich
his Carhartts of mourning. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Good old Nick. All right, well, I think my strategy is going to be to let like four or five of these stack up on the DVR and then watch them while I'm cleaning my office. What about you guys?
Yeah, same.
Yeah, that's about it for me, too. I'm curious to see the clothes. Jessica noticed a massive continuity mistake where Fallon shows up and catches them making out, and then we cut to commercial and we come back and she's in different clothes for their big confrontation.
Yes.
I'm always up for continuity mistakes that involve fashion.
It's time for Around the Dial. I will begin. This was originally supposed to be a pilot project until we had to scrub last week. So I'm going to be talking about Undercover High, which as we record this, premieres tonight. Last night, if you're listening to this the same day it came out, it's not to be confused with American High School, which is on Net Geo. No big names are mentioned as producers, but it's from Lucky 8 TV, which is also behind Brain Games, Behind Bars, colon, Rookie Year, and 60 Days In, which is fitting because that's basically what it is, 60 days in secondary school, as several adults in their early to mid-20s are embedded as students at Highland Park High School in Topeka, Kansas. So the first two episodes that were made available to critics, in those we only meet a few of the participants who seem to come from a cross-section of backgrounds, not only racially, but in terms of who had an okay time in high school the first time through and who may try to do things differently now that they're adults and have more self-confidence. For instance, Daniel hid his learning disability by becoming the class clown, and now he's a youth pastor. Erin was a bully, but she's now pursuing a PhD in education with the goal of becoming a school superintendent. Siblings George and Lena were among a tiny handful of Hispanic students at their Georgia high school and now prioritize making connections with students from Topeka's rapidly growing Hispanic community. So the series premiere, satisfyingly to me, takes us through the logistics of how this experiment will work. To wit, it will last a full semester. Participants will get assistance from a pair of school psychologists. They've had social media profiles set up for them in advance by a consultant who knows which platforms students of this age actually use, like Facebook is big, Instagram less so. I would have actually liked to see more of that because that was fascinating to me, the idea of like creating a fake background for a person to make it look like they didn't just come into existence last week. But anyway,
same.
There have been cameras around since before the undercover adults arrived. So the real students have been told producers are making a documentary about Topeka Public Schools. Also, in order to pass, Aaron gets braces. Once we get past this, we're mostly watching the undercover adults trying to fit in. All of them are pretty horrified by how much the real kids are on their phones, and so was I, frankly, as an elder person, including in class, despite like stated and posted rules to the contrary. Daniel observes a disruptive kid named Trayvon in one of his classes, recognizing something of himself and his behavior. Aaron's worried about having to try to pass algebra a second time. Can relate. Lena and George are befriended by a group of Hispanic kids and things seem to be going well until Lena starts drawing the attention of the dudes in her peer group or her ostensible peer group. They send her increasingly aggressive come-ons via text and Facebook chat, and then one of them accidentally adds her to a group chat in which someone announces that he's going to rape her, so that's kind of worrisome.
Ugh.
Yeah. She goes to the administration and stuff, but it turns out this kid doesn't go to their school. Still bad. In the next episode, we get follow-up on that, meet some more of the undercover adults, and arrive at the voting of the Winter Royalty King and Queen, the result of which uncovers some animosity that contradicts the students' self-declared post-racial attitudes. So the concept of this is intriguing to me because I've often thought that given the choice, I would sooner do high school over again than college, because what made high school sucky was all social stuff I don't think would be as annoying as if I had the life experience either not to let it bother me or to tell people to fuck off more. Whereas in college, all I did was read and work and it was a grind, but this isn't about me. The undercover adults convincingly look to my ancient eyes like they could really be high school students, and the situations they have gotten into, at least in the first two episodes, seem organic and not faked up for the cameras. And the undercover adults are also compelling and likable, and I'm interested in hearing how this experience goes for them. Sarah, I know you watched these first two episodes too. What did you think?
I have never been so glad to be an old.
Yeah.
And that the worst shit that was pulled on my grade grubby, like, second tier from the bottom of the social pecking order ass was the three-way calling trick.
Oh, yeah.
It's ask your great grandparents.
Well, that one's in Mean Girls too. Slightly, yeah, less elderly.
I am almost never glad that I went to all girls. This is like the one time I've ever been like, thank God. But there wouldn't have been any group texts. Like, I don't know where I would begin to be in high school. Like, I've given presentations at middle schools. These children are terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, you know, it's a completely different world for them socially. And I would never go back. Would never go back. I have such admiration for these people not turning and running away on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And to get braces again? Never.
I thought that was for the first time, unless her teeth moved, which happens if you don't wear your retainer, I hear from a friend of mine, me.
Yeah, I also heard that. Oh, well. Yeah, I'm going to keep watching it. Like, the thing with 60 Days In is that it seemed much more like cynical about its premise. And
yeah,
this, I think they really are hoping to like embed and see what kids are thinking.
Yeah.
About various issues and how social media is being abused for bullying and stuff like that. I mean, I thought it was well done, not too tricksy.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, high school is kind of like the more things change, the more they do kind of stay the same. So I don't know how much mileage there is there.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis like another season. But this season is interesting. Have you watched the other one yet? American High School?
No, but when I looked at it on, I was going to record it and then it said it was old, so I didn't bother. It said it originally aired in 2016, even though it was marked new in TV Guide, so I don't know what's going on with that one. Have you?
It's on my DVR, but I haven't looked at it yet, so.
Yeah. Anyway,
I think this format makes more sense, the 60 Days In format, because it's proven and I don't know. I like it. I don't think they can ever pull it off again, but it's interesting.
Yeah, probably not. But the interesting thing from a documentary perspective is that, like, because of social media, you would get so much, you'd have so much content in this story built in because all of it would be documented. Like, obviously, the only people there that they're going to show are the ones whose parents sign the releases for them.
Right.
Although I guess you can still show what messages someone sent if you don't say who they were. But yeah, I mean, the idea of, like, there just being no respite from your high school shit because social media is on 24/7. Like, you can't just go home and turn
it
off.
It's like my nightmare. Ugh. Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway.
It's like, I feel like I'm constantly saying, I'm so glad I was in high school before all that stuff existed.
Kidding. Anyway, for my plug, I'm going to mention one of our newest podcasts, which is Shark Tank Ranked, hosted by Philip Michaels, who also has been covering Shark Tank for us on previously.tv for the past couple of years. This week, he rewrote I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face for Kevin O'Leary and sang it. So that's the kind of thing you're missing if you don't listen. And you can subscribe to it on all podcast apps. It's extremely enjoyable, even if, like me, you don't watch Shark Tank. Really, all you need to know is what Phil thinks of it. So that is my plug. Dun, 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 Heather.
All right. I don't have a particularly revolutionary one, and I apologize for that. But I have to tell you guys that I have picked up Grey's Anatomy again.
there's not a lot I can tell anyone about Grey's Anatomy that they don't already know, but I quit that show. I stuck with it longer than most people, and I think I quit when Sandra Oh left, and I just hung on like for her exit episode, and that episode was so bad that I was like, I've made the right choice.
That's when I quit.
And I've even tried to get back into it over the years, but I turned on the premiere one season and saw the simple sight of the faces of like the new crop of young people. I literally just out loud to an empty room was like, oh God, I can't do this, and turned it off again. So I have tried before, but I don't know what it is right now. I think it might just be the state of the world, as cheesy as that sounds. There is something really reassuring about checking in with Meredith Grey every week. Ellen Pompeo has a very soothing voice, and I don't know, having Meredith around just sort of makes me feel like, okay, you know, this is going to be my hour where I know what to expect. I know these people. Like, it's for, even though it's a medical show where people are dying left and right and bleeding out of strange places, like, it's strangely soothing. So I don't know. I think I'm back in. I might be back in for good. Also, they gave a hated character a giant brain tumor and told her that it might have been affecting her personality for the last decade.
That's hilarious.
So my theory is that they're going to totally change her personality and try and be like, sorry, guys, we totally whiffed it on this one.
The medical drama workaround for face transplant.
Exactly. It's Derek's sister Amelia has like a grapefruit sized brain tumor, and yeah, I think they're basically I think they're rebooting her via brain tumor.
I mean, whatever works.
That's very Dynasty appropriate in a way.
It is.
My joke about Grey's is always that for me it's like a TV ex-boyfriend sort of who I think about, like, we broke up for really good reasons. I was very unhappy with it. Then like a lot of times I think about it really fondly, like maybe I should go back to that. I really miss it. Yeah. Like, I, so I'm just having Heather watch it and tell me about it.
Nice.
So I'm basically sleeping with my ex-boyfriend, is what you're saying. Which is okay. I'm strangely okay with that. Sorry, Kevin.
And what do you have to plug?
Should I plug the Go Fug Yourself website? I could plug the Royal We, which is our beloved novel. If perhaps right now you're interested in reading a story about an American girl who falls in love with a British prince and the trials and tribulations thereof, perhaps you might consider reading the Royal We, which we wrote ostensibly. It's more rooted in the Kate Middleton and Prince William story, but my God, Meghan Markle, thanks for making that relevant.
No kidding.
She's making us look extremely psychic right now.
Yes, available where all books are sold. So good. Highly recommended.
Thank you.
Dun, 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 dun. Jessica.
Yeah, okay, so this one's embarrassing. I just basically want people to join me in what I call my secret shame. I'm obsessed with the show on CMT called Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders, Making a Team. It is what it sounds like. It is a reality show about the audition process, Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders, which is very difficult. It's like the hardest professional cheerleading squad to get on. I don't even know what season we're on, like 10 or something. I've watched all of them. The season finale is coming up. And I just love it. Like, I find it very comforting in some way. I think in part because I've watched all the seasons. So, like, I kind of know the drill. Like, obviously, their big, like, thing is the kick line at the end where they do the jump splits. So I've gotten to the point where I'll be watching the show and I'll be like, this girl's never making this team. Look how her kicks are. Like, you kind of sort of get to know the point. But the finale, I think, is next week. It's all on demand. It's, like, very watchable if you like dance shows, or I feel like if you like to Bring It On, you might like it. It's just, it's surprisingly watchable and fun.
Awesome. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Sarah.
Oh, boy. My unsecret shame. Law & Order SVU. Where to start with this horseshit premiere / first two episodes? T-Bone, I know that you also have been watching. Heather and Jessica, I don't know if you are still punishing yourselves by sticking with this. Good for you. Smart. Don't go back. Anyone else who's watching along, pipe up anytime. Let's start with Noah, since the show also did, to my extreme irritation. Dynastically, he had aged like 3 years since we saw him last. I would actually prefer to leave that and him aside entirely, because this is not a family drama. Literally nobody gives a single molecule of a poop about this kid. Let's talk instead about how Benson is still portrayed in her scenes with her own child as fun mom TM from a PSA about eating too many sweets. What is that? Hargitay has three kids of her own. I really doubt she's this white-knuckled saccharine with them ever, much less all the time. Why has she not called for a rewrite of Benson as this mom who's the world's loudest helicopter and also almost kissing up to her own kid? I just don't feel like actual parents behave this way. See also the entire ridiculous subplot with her ex-boyfriend, Ryan O'Reilly. Not really. It's actually Cassidy investigating her with the DA's office when there's a perfectly good Munch already working there. I guess he refused to be a part of this shitty writing. I don't blame him. But she's being investigated for child abuse because Noah has a handprint on his upper arm after she yanked him out of a crosswalk and out of the way of a cab. Is it her first day living in New York City as a parent? No, it is not. Actual city kids have a sense of their surroundings, and actual city parents would rip the kid a new one for letting go of their hands, not hug him like he was just kidnapped, which he probably will be for February sweep, so I shouldn't even bring them a loic for mentioning it. There's also the wooden and tiresome interrogation in which the only relatable character in the piece of is the piece of shit suspect because he calls Benson on her, quote, sanctimonious crap. I understand what the show is trying to do, and especially with recent headlines, it really can't be said enough that we have to believe women and victims of sexual violence. But this method of, like, this service of that is unacceptable. It's so bad. And yet, I'm going to keep watching it. Total hate watch. I want the show to shut up, but I can't stop watching. I can't quit it. There is something very soothing about how much it sucks. So I guess our theme today is comfort TV that sucks. Anyway, here's what doesn't suck, and that's my plug. Our next edition of The Blotter Presents, the big episode, is with Alan Sepinwall, past guest of the show. He will be talking about yet another Dick Wolf property. It's called Criminal Confessions. It's on Oxygen, and for what it is, it's actually pretty decent. And yeah, that's it. That's it for Around the Dial.
Today for the canon, we have a user submission from, oh my god, I closed my email to be a good person, and I missed, I forgot to write down who submitted it. Only going to take a second while I look it up. Super professional Jenny from Minnesota. And she has brought us season 5, episode 12 of Mystery Science Theater 3000, entitled Mitchell. Let's hear all about it.
This month brings a new season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 with a new host, new mad scientists, and new voices for the robots. And it inspired me to submit for canon consideration episode 512, Mitchell, which is the episode in which original host Joel says goodbye and new host Mike says hello. The episode was originally aired October 23rd, 1993. Here's the plot synopsis. Our man stranded in space, Joel Robinson, welcomes us to the satellite of love and shows us his scale model of Monticello he made out of toothpicks. Joel is fully aware his robot creations, the lovable wisecracking Crow and Tom Servo, are waiting nearby with weapons to gleefully destroy it. In clip 1.
It's beautiful. Where'd you get all the toothpicks?
What, are you kidding? We're on a spaceship. This place is crawling with toothpicks.
Well, it really is cool, Joel. Of course, you know we'll have to break it.
It's nothing personal, you understand. It's just a thing we have to do.
This sequence foreshadows comedian Joel Hodgson's good humor and acceptance in saying goodbye to a show he helped make painstakingly by hand. Down in the mad scientist's lair, Deep 13, Joel's tormentors are being audited, so they hired a temp worker, Mike, to help them reorganize. In clip 2.
You guys watch Joe Don Baker movies?
Oh, look, just get back to work, temp boy. Right.
Well, here it comes, Joel.
Mitchell.
It's a super secret spy, has a motorcycle, marooned in space, meets Hercules or not. Watch it and weep, Joel Perlmutter. Send him the movie, Frank.
On to the movie. A failed attempt to sell the 1975 viewing public on Mitchell, a police crime drama starring Joe Don Baker as a police detective going up against organized crime in Los Angeles. We're meant to be charmed by his overconsumption, casual sexism, and racism. Joel and the bots respond appropriately. In clip 3.
Well, you could at least wash the dishes.
There's no machine.
Look, where I come from, you wash in the sink and you dry it with a cloth. Now try it before you
leave.
Yeah,
well, where you come from, beer's an entree.
Hey!
As always with MST3K, the folks riffing on the movie can find something charming, even in the most misguided attempts at filmmaking. For example, in this movie, the bad guy, played by a menacing John Saxon, and a henchman played by the always cuddly Merlin Olsen. And then there's another henchman who has a dead ringer for Andy Kaufman. Back on the satellite of love, Gypsy, the gentle giant robot Joel built to run the higher functions of the ship, overhears a sinister conversation between the mad scientists. This is filmed in the style of 2001 A Space Odyssey, mashed up with the classic misinterpreting an overheard conversation gag from such shows as Three's Company and Gilligan's Island. In clip 4.
He's been a canker sore on my gum line for too long.
The way he struts around like he owns the place. Pa!
Let's use method number 53, hmm?
Yes, elegant, painful.
And leaves nothing behind but the great smell of brute. Ha 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 ha!
Let's do it now.
No, no, patience, my little henchman. Let's wait until after the experiment.
Yes, brilliant. Make him work for it. Yeah. And then
our little bejumpsuited fool will be history.
Gypsy panics, believing the Mads are talking about Joel when they were really talking about Mike. And she goes into overdrive with a plan to safely extract Joel from the satellite of love, with a little help from a temp, Mike, a regular Joe the Mads just don't like. This leaves the Mads' bad movie-watching experiment without a human test subject, until Mike reminds them he needs his time card signed. In clip 5.
What's going on, Frank?
Oh, not much. Inventory's under control. Uh-huh. Floor needs mopping. Oh, good. Joel escaped from the satellite of love.
Well, I see you've got the situation well in hand. What? Joel escaped from the satellite of love?
Oh, I'd better get started on that floor.
Frank, my towel and your hinder have an appointment. But first, we've got to rescue Joel. Oh, no. No! Frank, he's landed safely in the Australian outback.
Well, let's just hope he landed on Yahoo Sirius.
Oh, well, that's a good point, Frank, because... Frank! Can't you see we're ruined? What are we going to do?
Well, we could send someone else into space.
Who are we going to find at this late date to send into space?
Did you guys sign my time card?
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Frank?
Yeah, you're not going to sign his time card, are you?
Come on, you got to sign my time card.
Of course I'll sign your time card, young man. In fact, I think you're going to be working for me for a long, long time. Push the button, Frank.
MST3K as a show celebrated the weird and bizarre and didn't hesitate to snark on lazy writing, hateful homophobia, and misogynistic messaging. When the show finally left the airwaves in 1999, I was bereft of smart cultural commentary until I found a certain long-form television recapping website in the mid-aughts. I chose this episode for the canon because it crystallizes for me the real merits of the show. Beyond simple smart Alex heckle a movie, this episode shows us its heart as Joel, the father figure to the bots, makes way for Mike and his wry smart Alec older brother persona. This transition in 1995 led to bitter flame wars in internet chat rooms, but I think the Joel versus Mike debate is beside the point. Mystery Science Theater 3000 provided intelligent pop culture analysis disguised as a bargain basement puppet show. Now we have a new guy in a jumpsuit riffing on bad movies with MST3K's new season on Netflix. What do you think, sirs and ma'ams?
Ha ha, no sirs this time. thank you, Jenny. Also, you can tell she sent this a little while ago based on referring to this month as when it came out. It was a few months ago. This was chosen from our list of user submissions by Heather and Jessica. So, Heather, why don't you start us off? What did you think?
I love this episode of MST3K. I had it on VHS. It was one of the first couple that I ever saw. And I think she's dead on that, like, as if you're going to submit an MST3K episode, the one that changes the guard from Joel to Mike is a really good one to pick. It just so happens that it also contains a really good riffable movie. I mean, the very first thing they say when they sit down and the word Mitchell is coming on screen, they can't read it. And they're joking that it says mittens. And one of the robots goes, Joe Don Baker is mittens. And I can't see Joe Don Baker without saying that. Granted, I don't see Joe Don Baker that often, but when I do, the first thing I say out loud is Joe Don Baker is mittens. And it goes from there. As I was, it even has a Dynasty tie-in because Linda Evans is in it. And while they're having sex in their love scene, which is one of the worst love scenes possibly ever committed to film, because it looks like he's passed out, she's just sort of mashing her lips onto his. There is a part where he reaches out with his bare foot, grabs a six pack off of the dressing table, brings it back into the bed, and then you cut later and he's putting it back and one of the beers is missing. It's such a bad movie, and sometimes you think, well, maybe what more could they add to it? But they're actually like, they're just, I don't know, the commentary is really good. It never ceases to crack me up. Every time they even just, he's running around and one of them starts going, because Joe Don Baker is the least active looking individual you could imagine in a cop movie. So, you know, for me, it's a no brainer. I think it's one of my favorites.
Jessica.
Yeah. I used to watch Mystery Science Theater like constantly, and I kind of forgot how much I enjoyed it. When we decided to choose this submission, I was kind of like, ugh, I don't know about this. I'm not that into the show. And then I remembered, no, I'm totally into this. It is hilarious. And I used to love this show. So in addition to the fact that I think this was an excellent episode to pick for all the reasons Heather elucidated and that were in the submission, I also sort of appreciate the fact that it reminded me that I think this, how much I used to love the show and how enjoyable it was. And kind of how I think in a lot of ways it sort of informed me as a recapper in a sense. I feel like you could really draw some parallels between this show and like what we used to do at TWAP, for example, which is kind of a similar, they're like cousins, do you know what I mean? So for me, I love this. I think it's just, it really kind of like brought it all back for me.
Sarah.
Yeah, pretty much everything that Jessica just said. I had not watched one of these in ages, probably 20 years. I had seen this one before. They had me at like when they're narrating the car chase, which is like notorious, even on the IMDb as being like the slowest car quote unquote chase in film history. And
the successful merge.
All the different ways they come up with to mock it, because it does really go on for a long time and they never lose steam. And I'm totally going to steal these for like trying to get from point A to point A.2 in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, because it's like, is this a fireman's funeral? Like, oh, I use that one. And then when he's getting out of bed and they're just making like morning fart noises, I was like, man, I've missed this. But they really do, like, I don't think I appreciated when they were originally on and I was watching them in college because I'm an old, like, how light their touch really is. It's really, like, for as sort of bargain basement as the framing is, it's a quite sophisticated ear for where the joke is supposed to go and how many of the jokes there are supposed to be. And it was really enjoyable to just watch pros at work, or probots, as it were. This was really
or
fun.
Just the randomness, the sheer randomness of some of their references.
I know.
Is amazing. Like the well-executed Johnny Mathis joke rarely happens in pop culture, but there it was.
It just kept that and the Andy Kaufman in Taxi, like callbacks that just kept happening every time the guy was on screen. You'd just be like, God, it was so good. Yeah, I loved it. I very much enjoyed watching this again. Tara.
I didn't watch this when it was originally on because I lived in Canada and I don't think we got it. And this may be a situation where if I had watched it at the time, I would appreciate it more. I've barely watched the show at all, in fact. And this did not really get me. I was, I felt like I guess I'm used to, you know, a 30 Rock pace of jokes, but it felt like there was a lot of dead time to me. It felt like they could have been more jokes. And every time they cut away to like the mythology stuff about, you know, the experiment and everything, I was like, get back to it. Like, I didn't care about that aspect of the story at all. So I get why this would be a watershed episode for people who were actually fans of the show at the time. But all of that meant really nothing to me, and it felt like it just slowed down the proceedings every time they cut back to like the live segments. So this didn't really work for me, but thank you for the submission anyway. It sounds like it doesn't really matter, so let's put this to a vote. Heather.
I vote yay.
Jessica.
I also vote yay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I may have fast-forwarded through the parts on the spaceship.
I did too, actually.
I can.
I did. It's still a yay for me.
All right, that's 3-1. The yays have it. Sarah?
Mystery Science Theater 3000, Season 5, Episode 12. Mitchell, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner of the loser, winner and loser of the week. I can't even read this since in front of my face. I have our winner. It is, of course, Deborah Messing, who last Friday got her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And it was an incredibly important event. The aforementioned Mariska Hargitay front and center. They are besties. So, who knows? So the entire event is obviously on YouTube, and you can find it in the show notes on the special episode of Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara that Kevin and I did all about this event, which was 43 minutes long. Our podcast on it is 33 minutes long, and we did not, in fact, we could have gone on longer. So you can find that at previously.tv/podcast. We are idiots. We are having fun. Sarah.
I have the loser this week. It is the beautiful Georgina Chapman, a.k.a. Weinstein's Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
I've always liked her. I thought she had good insights as a judge on PR All-Stars and occasionally on Regular Runway. She is really beautiful.
She is
beautiful. But these recent revelations, which I can't even call that because I feel like almost everyone has already known this for 20 to 25 years about Weinstein and his role in making her as a designer, are the absolute worst sort of collaborating. And I really want her to come out hard against him. Sorry to use the word hard. and until that happens, I hope she's not asked back on Runway or any other property where she's a public face until some of that stink is off her.
Yeah, for people who don't know, that's her husband. So, eek. Yeah.
And I feel like loser 1A of the week is Karen Craig, who is her partner at Marquesa, who is sitting at home sheet-caking right now, probably.
Oof.
Unclear what to do next.
Yeah.
Oof.
She's just got to wait till they figure out the divorce, Karen.
Right? Yep. Right? It's happening in a conference room somewhere right now.
Yep. Speaking of conferring, does anybody know what time it is?
I don't want to say. Molesting time? No.
It is, in fact, game time.
I forget the theme for game time. Game time.
That was beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is not a real game. This is a non-regulation game time, and so it is not so much a competition as an investigation into the panel's thoughts and feelings about certain iconic fashions of television.
Oh, good.
It's like the cooperative board games of the 80s, where there were no winners and losers. Everyone just learned cooperation.
Right. I mean, if you know, you guys want to pull each other's hair out, that's fine.
I mean,
I'm not going
to
stop you.
We'll try not to do it online.
Okay.
Or on.
This is a Dynasty episode, after all.
That's true. I'm going to push Heather into a lily pond later.
Oh, nice.
Or a pool.
Sure, whatever.
Indeed. This is King of TV Iconic Fashions Mountain. I have randomized a list of legendary fashions and fashion statements of television. Going back some decades, but there will be some stuff that everyone recognizes. We'll be going in alphabetical order. Heather, Jessica, and Tara. Heather, you'll get the first pair. You pick which one wins the face-off. The winner of that one goes to the next. Jessica picks, etc.
So I'm picking which one I think is most iconic?
Yes. Okay. Or just your preference.
Gotcha.
You are in the driver's seat as we begin. Once again, this list was randomized repeatedly. Carol Brady's shag from The Brady Bunch or Suzanne Sugarbaker's peplum suits from Designing Women?
Oh, that's a tough one. I was not a big Brady Bunch watcher, and I loved me some Designing Women. So I think I'm going Sugarbaker, which may be considered an upset, but the Designing Woman and her designer peplums, you can't go against Delta Burke in a fight. I'm picking Suzanne Sugarbaker.
I wouldn't. I definitely
even Florence would. Henderson would say
right?
that probably.
Yeah, I think she would.
Florence Henderson just like took a knee on that one and was like, "You go right ahead, Suzanne."
Yep. I'm behind you. It takes a village. All right, Jessica. Suzanne's okay. Peplums versus Ally McBeal's miniskirts.
Oh, I'm sticking with Suzanne. Like, I liked Ally, but I love Suzanne Sugarbaker.
Interesting.
I feel solid about this.
No, I think you're right.
I also would like to point out that I think Ally's mini skirts were actually derivative of the mini suits Amanda Woodward wore on Melrose Place.
Everyone was for sure.
This is so shocking. And I was like, you know what? No, it's not. Amanda Woodward has been wearing this at D&D advertising for like 10 years. So come back to me later. Ergo, Suzanne.
Mm-hmm. Totally fair. Tara, this one might be tougher for you than some others. Suzanne Sugarbaker's peplums versus Lix Storm's wide-legged pants on The Hour.
Oh, I mean, I got to go peplum just for cultural impact alone. I loved The Hour, but I don't think it had that much impact. So, but everyone should watch it. It's great.
It really is.
Peplum.
Okay, Heather, back to you. And the peplums are now facing off against Claire Underwood's pencil skirts on House of Cards.
Ooh.
Another tough one. Another close-cropped blonde. let's see. I am sticking with peplums. I think Claire Underwood's wardrobe was great, but I don't know that I think it's anything Juliana Margulies wasn't already sort of doing on The Good Wife. Or at least concurrently doing. And I don't know, I close my eyes and Delta Burke is lurking on the back of my eyelids. going with her.
Fair enough. All right, back to Jessica. The peplums versus Jess's Breton tees on New Girl.
Oh, well, I mean,
oh, shit.
Are you kidding me? A Jessica and a Breton tee? I am wearing a Breton tee and my name is Jessica. So I'm sorry, Delta Burke, but I'm going to have to go with my own self in this. Sorry. Zooey Deschanel takes this one. The Breton tee, this is appropriate for me, takes down the peplum for me.
I just want to see Zooey Deschanel play Delta Burke's like child on a TV show now. Did you think that maybe dressed God. In character?
That would work, actually. Yep.
There you go, sure. Hollywood. You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
I would watch that. All right, back to Tara. Breton tees of New Girl versus Blair Waldorf's headbands on Gossip Girl.
Well, that one's...
Breton. I'm also in a Breton right now for the record. So yeah, Breton. Breton all the way.
All right. I'm not sure the Breton is going to make it out of this round. Back to Heather. Breton tees versus Mary Tyler Beret.
Oh, well.
Oh, I got to go with the beret.
Yeah.
That beret. Reference will never, that reference will never get old. Like it's that is the iconic moment.
It's true. All right, Jessica, back to you. The beret versus Hannah's ill-fitting rompers on Girls.
Beret. Shouldn't be a hard one. Beret. I think Lena Dunham would also be like, beret, pick the beret.
Yes.
Yeah, that was like a beret of joy and rompers of shame.
Yes,
beret of joy.
Rompers of malaise.
Exactly.
Okay. I love how this is shaking out in terms of the order. Tara, the beret versus Rachel's Rachel on Friends.
It's still got to be beret. I mean, Rachel's in 20 years might have the kind of iconic status that the beret does, but not yet. Beret.
Okay. Heather, I don't envy you this choice. Beret versus Donna's mermaid prom dress on Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh. I don't think I can vote against Donna Martin. I got to go Donna Martin on
remember,
this
Remember, she
one.
Also had a lot of pearls and a wig.
I think I got to go Donna Martin. Is that insane? But, like...
Who are you talking to?
Donna Martin graduates. Donna Martin graduates from this round. Zing.
All right. Yeah. Okay, but she may sleep with the fishes shortly. Jessica, mermaid prom dress versus Carmela Soprano's dragon manicure.
Wow.
Okay, Tara, I do not envy you this choice. Yep. Mermaid prom dress or Javier Peña's jeans on Narcos?
Ah!
Keeping in mind, jeans. You can always vote personal preference. Is it jeans?
Extremely jeans.
All right, back to Heather. Javier Peña's jeans on Narcos versus Olivia Pope's flawless white tote bag from Scandal.
Wow. Well, I have never seen a single second of Narcos. So I'm going to have to go with the flawless white tote bag. Also because I feel like my takeaway from Scandal someday, once the rage subsides, is going to be like how well accessorized she was. So we're going to go with Olivia Pope's purse.
Yeah.
I did see Kerry Washington on The Late Show last week, and she was talking about all of this, the bags she plans to steal from the set when she's done. Yeah, and I support her.
Right. Me too.
Yes.
I won't kill a soul. All right, Jessica, Olivia Pope's white tote versus Woody Boyd's rugby shirts on Cheers.
Oh, this is hard.
Sharp intake.
I'm going to go with Woody. I got to go with Woody. Like, Olivia Pope is an amazingly accessorized person, but I think those rugby shirts are very iconic. Like, I can picture them. So Woody's going to take it.
All right. Tara, over to you. Woody's rugby shirts on Cheers versus, and I don't know if anyone else even watched this show, Double Trouble, the Ironed Bobs on Double Trouble. Anyone else remember this show?
I do. I don't think we got it in Canada, or at least I never watched it, but I have seen pictures. Nevertheless, I'm going to say Woody.
Oh, boy. Heather. Woody Boyd's rugby shirts, just a reminder, again, that this list was randomized. Tyra's big weave while she was screaming at Tiffany on America's Next Top Model.
Weave.
You've activated the weave alarm.
It's not even a question for, like, sorry, Woody, but, like, Tyra, weave.
We're all picturing it like that. If I don't have a tattoo, but if I ever got one, it would be her face in that moment.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Tyra flips her weave is TV at its finest. Sorry. And Woody, you're great, but weave.
All right, Jessica, Tyra's weave versus Blossom's hat.
Ooh, this is very difficult for me. I owned Blossom's hat as a teen, but Tyra is a precious icon to me. And in times of sadness, I go back and watch Top Model. So I'm going to go with Tyra.
Okay. All right, Tara, Tyra's weave versus Felicity's giant sweater collection.
Weave.
All right. Back to Heather. Tyra's weave versus Veronica Mars's canvas messenger bag.
Weave.
Okay. Jessica, the weave comes back to you. Weave versus Downton Abbey's long strings of jet beads.
Ooh. Ooh, this is tough for me. I love Downton, but I'm going to go weave.
Okay.
Keep going around the horn.
Tara, weave versus Buffy's many long coats.
It's still the weave, you guys. Weave.
I mean, her hair is amazing in that season.
It's so big.
It's a weave of power.
And it's this beautiful creamsicle color.
Yeah, she looks amazing.
All right. Can Carrie step to the weave? Heather, weave versus the nameplate necklace from Sex and the City.
Oh, man. Oh,
this is a good one.
Guys, that's a tough one because I feel like the nameplate necklace started a trend. And as much as I love weave, I don't know anyone who actually then went out and got that weave and put it on their own head. I might go nameplate necklace.
Yeah,
I think it might be time to dethrone the weave.
Okay.
Choice.
I think so.
I
think there's
that.
Justification.
Sorry,
Jessica,
weave. Yes. I'll be praying on that later.
Nameplate necklace versus Charlie's Angels Farrah's non-bra.
Oh, ooh, that's tough. I'm going to stick with the Carrie necklace. It's also very important as a plot point in Sex and the City. So in addition to being trendy and like a fashion icon moment, it also was a really pertinent story point. So I'm going with that. Farrah's boobs were not a story point, as far as I recall.
Weren't they? They
well,
weren't.
They were a point of
overtly.
Some sort.
I was going to say.
All right, Tara. Nameplate
yep.
versus Rayanne's Stevie Nicks drag on My So-Called Life.
Oh, nameplate. I mean, I love Rayanne, but nameplate.
Okay. Heather, nameplate versus Laverne's L.
Oh, those are two of a piece.
Oh, one is a cut, like a precursor to the other.
It's really true.
It is. It's like mother-daughter logo wear. Oh my God. I'm still maybe going to go nameplate.
Okay.
Because I think its reach has been, its tentacles have stretched further.
Well put. Jessica.
Thank you.
Nameplate necklace versus Neil's Rat Pack hat on White Collar.
Ugh, nameplate. Although, I enjoy White Collar, but nameplate. Let's get real.
Yeah, let's indeed. Okay, Tara, buckle up. Nameplate necklace versus Mike Logan's leather coat from Law and Order Mothership.
Oh, I kind of like this because it's Mr. Big versus Carrie.
I was going to say Carrie v. Big. I mean, despite personal preference, it's still the nameplate. I mean,
yeah.
If it were tie or flag pin, we'd have a different conversation. But I think over the coat,
yes,
nameplate.
I was torn over which Logan thing to put. Wasn't sure flag pin was quite foxy enough. All right, back to Heather. Still nameplate versus the Partridge Family's matching performance outfits.
Ooh, nameplate.
Okay. Jessica, nameplate versus Tim Gunn's windowpane plaid suits on Project Runway.
I love Tim, but I think he would agree that nameplate.
Tara, nameplate versus the fitted shift dresses of Revenge.
Nameplate. Revenge didn't last long enough for that to really be
a
cultural moment, I think.
And I felt like maybe I should have picked the chair, but then we were into home decor and it was
the
whole
chair.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Back to Heather. Nameplate versus Seinfeld's blindingly white sneakers.
Ha! I feel like every time it comes to me, there's a sharp intake of breath from me. That is really difficult, but I think a nameplate. I got to go nameplate.
All right, last two. Nameplate. Standing tall, Jessica. Nameplate versus Dorothy Zbornak's gazillion layer post-apocalyptic looks in Miami on the Golden Girls.
I was going to say that I don't think anything can take down nameplate, but B. Arthur just fucking took down nameplate. I have to go with Zbornak.
All right, Tara.
Oh, man.
No pressure.
Ooh.
Fashions by Zbornak versus our final challenger, Joan Harris's pen necklace. From Mad Men.
You guys, I am looking at the pen necklace on my desktop wallpaper right now, and I'm not even joking. Pen necklace.
Damn.
Wow, exciting.
Pen necklace is the king and queen of TV fashion icons.
I feel good about that.
Thank you so much for playing.
She came out of nowhere to take the win. Seems right.
Boo 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 boo.
This is so soothing. I almost don't want to start talking. But in fact, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We strapped on our shoulder pads and bit the head off the bride that was the Dynasty premiere before we ran around the dial with stops at Grey's Anatomy, Undercover High, Law & Order SVU, and Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, making the team. The cannon took us back to space! case with an MST3K submission from Jenny. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and everyone was the winner of this week's non-regulation, not exactly a game, game time, but especially Joan's pen necklace. Remember, we're listening. Oh, God, that was bad. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
I was too busy singing to think of an outro thing.
And Jessica Morgan, I didn't either. Let's go with it. We'll talk to you next time on Extra Hot Great.
Just tell me what you want me to say.
Goodbye.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Weave.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why MyLowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.